Well, good morning to you. You all right? Oh, it's a bit too hot. Straight from the kettle. Burning all the way down my throat. Oh. I'll leave that to cool for a moment. Are you all right, though? I hope you are. Sincerely hope you are. Have a good evening. Me? Yeah, I'm all right. Yeah, I'm fine. Yeah, cool, Sam. It has just ticked past 8 in the AM British summer time on Tuesday. We're now on Tuesday, the 19th of May, in the year of our Lord 2026. Who are you guys? You know who you are. You're the glorious band, the chosen few. The very best people on earth. You're watching this, you're watching the Bo Show live. You're watching Breakfast with Bo live in the chat, getting involved, sending in super chats and stuff. Brilliant. What more could a boy ask for? Thank you. Sincerely, thank you. Without you, it's not a thing. As always, I'm joined by my producer this morning, Little Harry. How are you, good sir?
Morning, I'm all good.
Disembodied voice of the all-powerful, godlike producer. If you stop faffing about, why are we fannying about? Let's just get straight into it. What's that cabal of evil Fleet Street editors banging on about this morning? What are they trying to lie to you about by omission, if nothing else? What have we got? What are they saying? We got Starmer sabotages Burnham. In a sense. Not exactly. And Best of Buddies, which is a reference to the Chelsea Flower Show, David Beckham and Alan Titchmarsh. We'll get into it. Don't worry about it. We'll get into it. It's basically a bit more of a Labour Civil War day. I don't want to spend like most of the show on it because there are some more data points and some more things have come out, but maybe try and look at a few other stories this morning as well. All right. What have we got first? The Tory Graph, the Daily Telegraph. There we go. Look, they're asking just one of their supplements. Why do politicians insist on running, especially fat ones? Yeah, like Boris Johnson running. Yeah. Okay. Between pie-eating bouts, he pretends to go on a run. Okay. The Daily Telegraph. Starmer sabotages Burnham on Brexit. PM says debate could happen as challenger Burnham seeks to keep Leave voters on side. So I suppose this is one of the main points this morning, sort of the main new data points. Although it's not massively new, is it? It was sort of happening in the news cycle yesterday. So just to reiterate them, really, maybe you didn't see the show yesterday or you haven't been watching the news over the last 24, 36 hours or so. Burnham's going to be standing in that seat in Wigan, right, which was something like 65%. Leave during the referendum 10 years ago, and all of their local councils, all of them, went reform at the last local elections a week or two ago. So in other words, broadly speaking, they won't take kindly, they won't take kindly to rejoining Europe, or the majority of them won't. And the voter turnout, along with nearly everywhere else in the country, is pretty damn low. So there's also a massive chunk of them, maybe as much as half, so disaffected by everything that they don't even bother turning out to vote, even for a strategic vote, even for like reform and stuff. Well, we'll see about reform, but the voter turnout there was really low. So in other words, you can be relatively confident that they don't want to hear about rejoining Europe. That's not their thing in mostly white, mostly working class Wigan. Right, okay, so, but Burnham, that puts Burnham on a bit of a sticky wicket though, doesn't it? Because he is a proper lefty, further to the left than Starmer, has been on record the whole time being sort of pro-EU, was like a Remainer, right, back in the day, 10 years ago. Is it 10 years ago? God, it doesn't seem that long ago. I've said it before, as you get older, months and years tick by like no one's business. So Burnham has always been, anti-Brexit. And now he's trying to win a by-election in a pro-Brexit area. And Wes Streeting, if you remember yesterday, he came out and he said if he should enter any sort of leadership election and or win, his policies, he would stand on a ticket of getting much, much, much closer to the EU and ultimately rejoining the EU. That was what he said. Not sort of immediately, not on day one of a Wes Streeting premiership, but that's what he would like to do. That's obviously an appeal to the left of the Labour Party, not to the country as a whole. Wes Streeting's going to lose his seat at the next general election anyway. His majority's razor-thin, or 600-odd, razor-thin, but it's very, very small. That's not much at all. So that's what... And Keir Starmer is apparently, you know... This is what the sabotage was referencing to. That's what this... At the top, look. Starmer sabotages... It's in this sense. That Starmer's still, like, underlining his policy, which is... Not to actually rejoin the EU or like the free market or the freedom of movement stuff that goes with being in the EU, but short of that, to get much, much closer ties with Europe where possible. In other words, any talk from Labour, whether it's Starmer or Streeting or whoever, of closer relationship with the EU or rejoining the EU, any of that, any and all of that, undermines and damages the Burnham camp. As well as anyone reminding him that he has been anti-Brexit his entire political career. Well, the last 10 years. Here's a little bit of a difficult position Burnham finds himself in. I think that's a great place as far as restore are concerned, and reform. That's a great place for a Labour MP to have stood down to allow Andy Burnham a shot at getting back into Westminster. It's almost perfect for restore and reform. It's a Labour seat I would have thought they would lose at the next general election. Anyway, regardless of anything. It feels like it's a slam dunk sort of a place for right-leaning, right-of-centre parties. Maybe, people have said, and it may well be right, that Josh Simons, the guy that stepped down for Burnham, was always a diehard, I mean truly, truly diehard, dyed in the wool to the ends of the earth Starmer partisan. Could it be a little bit of 4D chess from the Starmer camp when Burnham's sort of shopping around for someone to vacate their seat for him? You know, most MPs wouldn't want to do that. It's the end of their political career, at least for a while. If you're Labour, probably forever. So, you know, unless you're promised something very, very good, why would you do that? Maybe, I don't think Starmer is this sort of clever, I don't think he's like this great of a chess player, but maybe he thought, looked at the map, looked at various things, and was like, Josh Simmons in Wigan, in Makerfield. If he were to step aside, ostensibly for Burnham, in aid of Burnham, that seat will probably lose it. It might be that, mightn't it? Do you give Starmer that much credit that he was playing that sort of game? Him and Simmons contrived that? Maybe. I suspect not, but maybe. It's difficult to take that Josh Simmons at his word, because he said, I genuinely think this is the best thing for the party. It's the best thing for the party and Britain. That I stand aside and let Andy... Bumham become the next Prime Minister or the next leader and Prime Minister, etc. It's difficult to take that Josh Simons at his word because he's such a scumbag. Like the worst type of politician you can imagine, really. Completely amoral. Well, just look at that scandal he was embroiled in where his Labour affiliated think tank thing, pro Starmer think tank thing, was embroiled in some sort of scandal about, I think quite literally, spying on journalists. Was it like Daily Mail journalists or something? Dirty tricks. Really. So, okay. Starmer and Streeting talking up pro-EU sentiment, which sabotages, quote-unquote, sabotages Burnham. All right, there you go. What else have we got? On the front page a little bit today. I think it was in the news a couple of weeks ago, mention of the David Beckham, Golden Balls, was personally entering some sort of entry into the Chelsea Flower Show. Anyone in England and Britain would know what that is, but just in case you're foreign or you're American, you might not have ever heard of that. Exactly what it says on the tin. There's a place in West London, Chelsea, quite posh place, nice place, that has a flower show. It's as simple as that. But for some reason, in Britain, it's in some circles, it's kind of a big deal. I just don't say a big deal, but every year when it comes on, like, the papers will mention it. Oh, Chelsea Flower Show next week. You know, like, they'll mention the Grand National or something, or they'll mention the FA Cup or something. Like, oh, it's Chelsea Flower Show, right? Unless you're into horticulture and gardening and flowers, you wouldn't care at all. But if you are, it's sort of like a big deal. All right, so David Beckham. There you go, who would have thought? Beckham was into flowers. And then this guy, again, if you're foreign, if you're British, you would know, but if you're not, that's Alan Titchmarsh, and he's just sort of, has been for years and years and years, a staple of sort of TV gardening shows. Beckham and Titchmarsh are now best of buddies. Look, best of buddies. That's it, that's all that is, but it's on the front pages of the papers a fair bit. Okay. Slop. I mean, quite a wholesome slop, isn't it, for once? But, slop, so we'll move on from it. Also, in the Torygraph, we've got Streeting's NHS home working revolution puts patients at risk. Yeah, probably. How can you work from home in the NHS? Oh, actually, if there's loads of administration-type staff, perhaps you could work from home, but... There's all sorts of questions at the moment, whether the NHS is doing better than expected at the moment. You know, with Streeting's resignation letter and in Sir Queer's response to that, they were both sort of in agreement that the NHS is doing much better at the moment, waiting this star down. And it was a good job. Streeting had done a good job. If you try and use the NHS, you might form a different opinion. Okay. All right. The Mirror. Some of the worst sloppy in the Mirror. The Mirror's like, it's down there with the Star and the Sun. In some ways worse. Their Farage and Reform derangement syndrome is pretty bad. It's one of the worst ones, the Mirror, for some reason. They've decided who owns the Mirror. Okay. Look, best of buddies again. They say go with the same thing. Best of buddies. Oh, look, and the King, sorry. Titchmarsh, Bex, and Sausage Fingers, Sex Cobo Gotha. There you go, all in one picture. Boom. Right. Starmer's defiant message. I won't walk away. PM rejects call to set out departure timetable and is up for the fight. But Burnham says he'll lead Labour charge as he rules out Brexit rerun. So, this is one little data point then. Over the weekend, it was reported, I think I talked about it yesterday briefly, didn't I? On Brexit Zubo, hashtag the real BBC. That there was reports, I think Dan Hodges might have been, or more than one person mentioning that Keir Starmer was... spent the weekend at Chequers, you know, the prime ministerial country, rural retreat, mansion, country house place. And he was considering his position, considering his future. Which is a bit different, isn't it, to simply, I will fight on, there is no timetable. Starmer bot will not resign under any circumstances. Beep, beep, beep. Well, looks like that reporting was either inaccurate or he might have had a wobble. And decided, no, I'm still going to fight on, because that's what he's saying now. He's saying, I won't walk away. If and when there is any sort of leadership contest with Burnham, probably just with Burnham, isn't it, mainly? Because the others just don't seem to have the support in the wider membership, if nothing else. I'll talk about that in a moment. He's saying he will fight on. He's confirmed that. He's confirming that. It's consistent with what he's always said and what he's like, isn't it? The Starmer bot, that he would, like a Ceausescu figure, would never, ever, ever give up on power, regardless of anything. The world can burn and collapse around him before he would dream of doing such a thing. All right, then. And Burnham, is like trying to distance himself from pro-EU sentiment, even his own previous pro-EU sentiment. Because the voters in Makerfield are not going to, most of them, not going to want to hear that. Not going to want to hear that. Okay. The Financial Times. Burnham tries to ease markets while vowing to reverse sell-offs. This is just something about a little bit how the bond markets, the gilt-edged bond markets, were a little bit jittery. Where Burnham Andy Bumham had said that he would, a paraphrase, but he basically said he would stick largely or almost entirely with the financial policies that the current Labour government are going with, like Rachel Reeves' vision of the economy and the Exchequer. You'd sort of stay with that. Good one. Good one. Does that really please anyone? There's people on the left of the party and to the left in sort of the wider chattering classes, like Owen Jones or something. They're not going to be happy with that. They would have liked him to go further, deeper to the left. And everyone else to the right of the Labour Party are not happy with that. It's like, well, Rachel Reeves' economic vision is disastrous. Sort of stupid, sort of obviously doomed to tank our economy. So is anyone really happy with that, other than that it just settles the bond markets a bit? Labour front-runner backs fiscal rules. Gilt yields bonds, government bonds. A retreat following pledge. What? Is Burnham going to be a whole different change? Not really. It'll be exactly the same as Starmer, but a bit more to the left. There won't be any profound change. Particularly on immigration, right? He's a safe and legal routes guy. Try and talk to Andy Burnham about re-migration. Then, no, of course not. You're an evil fascist Nazi if you do that. If you want to just even put caps, any cap, no matter how big. Even if you said, can't we cap it at, like, some astronomical, disastrous, demographic-destroying number? Can't we cap it at 500,000 a year? No, not even that. No, any question of a cap just leads them to retort with, we need more safe and legal routes. That's who Andy Burnham is. He's one of those people. Effectively open borders. So don't expect anything profoundly to be addressed about all our problems in this country, which nearly all stem from, or nearly all downstream from, the millions and millions of new people that are here, doesn't it? Nope, Andy Bumham won't address any of that. Because he's a traitor, essentially. Right, something about Nige here. You remember when he was in I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here? Remember that? Bush Tucker denial. Farage's accountants challenged claims he paid £1.5 million for a house with TV fee. The money he got paid to be on I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. Did he buy his £1.4 million house with that money, or perhaps with the £5 million he was given by that crypto millionaire dude? I don't really care one way or another. You know, I want to defeat reform. I don't care about this sort of nonsense, really. If he's shown to have truly sort of been corrupt and truly, you know, taken money in a nefarious, illegal way, that's a story to me. But what he actually does with the money, I don't particularly care. Again, as long as it's not sort of illegal or anything. Buying a house isn't illegal, is it? So it's just a bit of Nigel noise. Lewis Brackwell the other day characterised it as Nigel noise. I think so, yeah. Okay. Oh, Musk in the news. Musk's case against Altman OpenAI dismissed for being outside time limit. So yeah, Musk was taking that Sam Altman to court about OpenAI and lost the case. It was something to do with statute of limitations. That's what the court ruled. That Musk needed to have taken Altman to court earlier than he did. Some of the details, like Musk said, he only knew about the Altman's alleged wrongdoing only 2 or 3 years ago or something. But some emails shown he must have known about it years before that. Therefore, it's outside the statute of limitations. Therefore, the case is dismissed. Okay, there's that. Fine, okay. Doesn't really get to the true nub of it, though, does it? Like, did Sam Altman do anything wrong? Or, you know, out of order? Sort of stealing the code or whatever? I don't know. I'm not... I'm not a coder, I'm a real boomer. I don't understand. I don't want to even understand all the technical details of it, but the question of whether Sam Altman did anything out of order or wrong, it was not addressed. It was just, it's outside the statute of limitations. So, yeah. All right. The Mail, absolute globalist slot, trying to pretend it's not. Again, I know this is only like a, say, I said it yesterday, and I've said it a few times. I know this is only like a, they're trying to shill or sell their insert magazine or whatever. But look how anti, look how, look, I'm secretly giving my daughter, this is my 17-year-old daughter, my Mounjaro jabs. So that's like a good thing. As though that's like something you want splashed over the headlines. As though you're secretly giving your 17-year-old daughter drugs on some level, in some way. Mad. Okay, something about Kylie there. Don't really care about Kylie. All right. Labour civil war. Slippery bum hams, two U-turns in one day. They say, that's how they characterise it. He changed his mind on Britain rejoining EU. Yeah, he's always been a staunch Remainer, hasn't he? Oh, sorry. Yeah, staunch Remainer. To stand in pro-Brexit area. And now says he'll stick with Reeves' rules, meaning tax hikes. But again, I said yesterday, that's what leftist politics is. Tax big, spend big. It's just that, isn't it? Nearly always. Of course Burnham wouldn't do anything different. Of course not. Don't worry about that we're being taxed more than we've ever been. I mean, I think ever. But some of the highest tax rates in the world. People struggling to make ends meet. We're spending way beyond our means. Struggling to repay the interest repayments on what we've borrowed. Bad. If that was your personal finances, you're in dire straits. If they were your personal finances, you would be looking at filing for bankruptcy and stuff. You'd be very close to being homeless and stuff. You can't really afford to repay the interest repayments on money you've borrowed, and you're just simply not getting in enough money to do that. Anyone that would lend to you takes a look at your situation and like, I don't think so. Or that's not, it's a bad spot. Bad spot for us to be in. Andy Burnham says he wants to end austerity. We're not really in austerity, like true austerity, you know, like the Great Depression. Or just after World War II type austerity. Like David Cameron's austerity. It wasn't that austere, was it? Really? Just keep spending. Just keep borrowing and spending. Keep taxing, borrowing and spending. No, the responsible thing to do would be to slash spending. Now that's not popular, is it, with normal people? Start looking, staring down the barrel of real austerity. Real, real austerity. But that doesn't really win votes, does it? People want Gibbs. But it is the right thing to do. And they moan about how we're at the beck and call of the guilt markets. Like the evil guilt markets are holding us to ransom in some way. And we borrowed to the hilt from them. I always think that's weird when lefties try and characterise it as though it's like this evil bond market won't let us do what we want, won't let us spend an endless amount of money. Why are they doing that? Who are they to do that to us? No, you've fundamentally misunderstood what's going on here. We owe them money already. The best thing to do, the most prudent thing to do, would be to cut spending massively and try and pay back our national debts and then look where we are. And it would be hard, wouldn't it? It would be actual austerity. But it's that, or go down sort of an endless cycle of getting in more and more and more debt until what? Until we have to borrow loads of money from the International Monetary Fund? Until we default on our national debts? Or what? I don't know. All right. But while you've got lefties at number 11 and in the Treasury, they won't stop. They won't stop. They don't know any other way. All right, the times, the venerable times. End of an era. Pep Guardiola expected to leave Man City. Don't care. The manager of Manchester City Football Club. Don't care. Burnham, far ahead of Starmer in Labour vote. And I think that's that will be a reference to the Labour Party membership. So quick word or two on that. It's all very well, isn't it, for anyone, whether it's Burnham or Streeting or whoever, to get 81 MPs to back their bid to trigger a leadership election. That's one thing. Okay. But it would almost certainly, probably, boil down to a two-horse race, at which point the membership and unions get a vote, get a say in it. Say in it. So, if there was one person that all the polls suggest wins that easily, then that's it, right? That's the whole ballgame. That's the whole kit and caboodle, assuming they get to the last two. Is there any such personage? Yeah, Andy Burnham, yeah. He's much more popular among Labour Party membership and the unions than Keir Starmer, much more. So Keir Starmer would have to try and beat him in an earlier round of the leadership election. That doesn't look likely either. Yeah, so 2/3 want new PM by next general election. The numbers don't look good for Keir Starmer, do they? I mean, it's not going to happen anytime soon now, is it? Everyone's waiting for this by-election to come. I think the vote, is it on the 18th of June? That's what I heard somewhere. 17th, 18th of June, something like that. So pretty much almost exactly a month from now. And then let's just assume for a moment, for the sake of argument, for the sake of discussion, let's just assume Andy Burnham wins that. Then I think Keir Starmer's done, really. He must be finished at that point because, as I say, if it comes down to the final two, he will lose that. Will he take it all the way to the limit? Push it to the limit. The limit. Will he? Will he go right to the bitter end, to the final two, and then get whooped? Right at that point, maybe, probably. What other? Unless he does decide to stand down, sort of his own free will. All right. Someone named a rose, in fact, was it even a David Beckham rose? Someone named a rose after Kate Moss. Kate Moss, who was a supermodel like 30 years ago or more. She looks all right for her age, doesn't she? But there you go. Allow me to raise criminal age for children. This is an interesting thing. Over the weekend and yesterday and today, David Lammy has been talking about various things to do with prosecuting children and possibly prosecuting the parents of criminal children. One thing in the news yesterday, which I just didn't get round to, it was just one of the other stories, was that there was rumblings, about that Lammy wanted to introduce legislation which meant that if your kid did serious crime, that you as the parent could be, you know, criminally liable in some way. Depending on the circumstances, of course. Like, for example, there's the Southport kid. I say kid. What, he was 17, though, wasn't he? So he was not an adult, even though he was 17. But as it stands at the moment, his parents can't be, charged with anything particularly. Even though when you look at the details of the case, and the inquiry has, that they definitely are guilty of some failings, if you put it that way, failings. That they knew what type of person he was, what he had in his mind, sort of. Like, I don't think they knew exactly what he was going to go and do that day, but there were many, many times when they could have, should have reported him to the police, reported him to his mental health carer, worker, person, all sorts of stuff, reported that he had knives and crazy things. Not only didn't they do that, it seems like they even helped cover it up. You know, lying by omission again, if nothing else, all that stuff. Now, they at this point, as the current law stands, they can't be prosecuted for anything. As far as the law is concerned, they're not responsible in any way, but they are, aren't they? But they are. So, okay, I'm not necessarily against that. It's funny, it's coming from Lammy and the left and the Labour Party, because usually the left are the type of party that would not go down that route. Like, how can you hold somebody else responsible for somebody else's crime? That sort of argument. You know, if the Tories wanted to hold parents responsible for the crimes of their children, you can imagine Labour in opposition would go berserk about it. And the Lib Dems would go berserk about it, but because it's them. So there's that, the whole discussion around, are parents responsible for the crimes of their children? Different to that, well, adjacent, but different to that. Lammy saying he wants to raise the criminal age for children. So in Britain and Wales at the moment, I think it's 10 years old. If you do a crime and you're under 10, there's just a whole different set of... So, for example, you remember the Jamie Bulger murder? Anyone doesn't remember? It's a long time ago. It's like the 1990s. Two little kids, and they were little. They were under 10. I think they were 7 or 8 or 9 at the time. And they abducted a little toddler, a 2 or 3-year-old, Jamie Bulger, and then they tortured and murdered him. Terrible, 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 unbelievable crime. But they were so young that it was like a special case. Like, what do you do with, like, small children that do something like this? Because, of course, it's very, very rare, isn't it? It's super rare, but it does happen. It does happen. All right, so there's that. Oh, you have to put them in some sort of special mental secure hospital, don't you, for quite a long time. Although they're both out now, although one went back. Anyway, David Lammy wants to raise it from 10 to 12. And in some cases, perhaps a little older, even. Was there some talk of 14? Or as high, possibly as high as 14. Seems odd to me, though. Why? What's wrong with the current system exactly? Because I imagine there's quite a few children under the age of 14 that do crime. Like quite often, in fact. Incredibly. What a horrible indictment of our society that is. That you get a 13-year-old who does some sort of knife attack. That's far from impossible, isn't it? Again, it's not all that common. It's not insanely rare. So why does he want to do that? Oh, I don't know. Who knows what goes on in the mind of David Lammy? Because he was at the Justice Department, he thinks he's some sort of master of jurisprudence. He knows about the nature of justice and stuff. No. Doesn't even know who Marie Antoinette is. Doesn't know... He thinks Henry VII came after Henry VIII. I mean, he's a true moron. All right, The Guardian. Ugh. The Steenkamp, Harry. Ugh. The Guardian. Ugh. Giving me a headache. Give me an aneurysm. Ugh. The Guardian. Gross. There's Fassbender there. Some actress. So Michael Fassbender, just a little tidbit, fun fact. He's actually a race car driver. No, genuinely. Not Formula One, I think. He races in, what is it like, GT3, GT2, something like that. He's not bad either. I mean, hasn't set the world alight. He's not going to be a world champion or anything. He's not going to win Le Mans in his class or anything. But he's quite competitive. He's quite good. He's a better driver than you or me. Whoever you are. No, he's good. He's really good. Imagine that, being an A-lister, and then, like, your side gig, your side hustle, you're actually competitively good at the thing, whatever it is. You know? Like, Cumberbatch is really good at tennis. Sometimes qualifies for Wimbledon. Something like that. Anyway. Fassbender. He can drive a race car on the limit of grip. Not many people can do that. Okay. Burnham. Labour must change to regain trust. All right, Bumham. All right, mate. Just pipe down. All right. Farage house purchase under fresh scrutiny. Is it? Deadly outbreaks more frequent and damaging. That's to do with the Ebola thing. A few people have died of Ebola now in Uganda. Don't worry too much. It shouldn't reach you wherever you are. Unless you're watching this in Uganda, in which case, stay safe, you know. The Express, oh, it's a good paper. It's not their complete slop. When I got in trouble with Hope Not Hate and got deselected from Reform and the Daily Record, that socialist Scottish rag, put me on their front page. The Daily Express, I think the Mail as well. They ran a little story about me as well. Scumbags. Absolute scumbags. Deliberately misrepresenting what I said. Just going with whatever Hope Not Hate said I said. Completely out of context. Deliberately so. The Express. Pure globalist filth. Again, trying to pretend they're sort of they're patriotic or on your side as the nativists. You're a subversion like all the rest of them. Okay, they go with 66% back the financial guarantee for pensioners despite proposals to axe it. It's about the triple lock on pensions. I won't bore you too much with it. Britons want to keep pension triple lock. Do they? Well, old people that are of pension age or close, they would, don't they? Do young people want to? Well, according to no one I know does. No one at all. No one I know that's younger or even sort of middle-aged, my age, in their 40s. We've got any hope of getting any sort of state pension. I expect by that point, the economy and the treasury, the national purse, will be in such a terrible state they won't give us any pensions. But according to The Express, their own poll or something, or is it YouGov, reckon that 66% of people want it, and even 44% of 18 to 34-year-olds are in favour of the triple lock pension. I find that difficult to believe. 44% of young people want their future ripped away from them so pensioners can have more money right now. I don't know anyone. I don't know anyone that's younger who holds that opinion. IRL. Not one person. All right. Okay. Don't worry about that. The Express is completely partisan on the issue and has had its own campaign in order to save the triple lock. Don't worry about that. Don't worry about whether they might be misrepresenting reality and the truth. Papers, Fleet Street, never worried about that, have they? They've never worried about that. Okay, here's an interesting thing about transport. HS2, for anyone who doesn't know, that's a new train line we're building in Britain. HS2. It's supposed to be like a brand new cutting edge, super fast train line. It was going to go all the way up to the north, I believe, but then it's just the whole project's been beset by an insane amount of setbacks and problems, costing an insane amount of money. It's going from London to Birmingham at the moment. Well, anyway, let's just read the current stuff. HS2 will cost more than NASA's Artemis moon mission. How? Who's embezzling all this money, an insane amount of money, £100 billion, and another 10 years? It's already been going on for years and years and years, and spent untold billions on it. Another £100 billion. Okay, the blurb says, UK's stripped-back high-speed link, because it was going to be much, much bigger and more ambitious originally, already the stripped-back version, is set to become the most expensive rail line in the world. It's only from London to Birmingham. It's not that far. What is that, 100 miles, maybe? Less, more, 80, 120 miles? It's something in that ballpark, I think. It's not a fantastic distance. All right, the most expensive line in the world, with further delays and higher costs expected when new timetable is announced today. Well, that will probably be the Transport Secretary, won't it? Heidi Alexander, the Right Honourable Heidi Alexander, the MP for Swindon South. Big fat mess of a woman who can't even get her own diet in order, let alone the transport system. New cost estimates for beleaguered... Oh, 140 mile, sorry. Okay. 140 mile line... 140 mile rail line likely to reach around £100 billion. You get that that's an insane number, right? You hear about billions being thrown around all over the place. Billions here, billion there, 10 billion here, 10 billion. £100 billion is an insane number. You know, like the James Webb Space Telescope cost, what, £10 billion, is it? Or is it 20? Something like that. So, yeah, 100 billion is less than the Artemis mission to go to the moon. Well, the blurb continues. More than NASA's £79 billion projected cost for its Artemis mission to land astronauts on the moon. How is it costing us £100 billion to build a railway to Birmingham? How is that? How is it possible? Something deeply, profoundly wrong with this country, isn't there? You know, like you hear stories like this all the time. The local council or the government or whatever wanted to build a bridge. Not like some sort of giant bridge spanning the Severn or spanning the Thames or something. Just a normal sort of local bridge. A little project. And it takes them like 5 years, 10 years, and costs them like £1 billion or something. It's like Brewster's Millions. Someone somewhere is very, very, very deliberately spending as much as they possibly can on it. Taking as long as they possibly can and making the budget spiral out of control. For what purpose? Who's gaining out of all of that? Okay, Transport Secretary Heidi Alexander, big fat mess Heidi Alexander, expected to announce cost-saving measures such as slower speeds. The whole point of it is that it was going to be super fast. That was the whole point of it. You can already go from London to Birmingham. You can already get a train from London to Birmingham. The whole point of this was it was going to be super fast. Originally, it was to get to the north super fast. The whole point of it. So now they're compromising on the speed of it. And the completion date will likely be pushed back again. Again, it's already years and years over. Pushed back with trains running to Birmingham by 2035. It would be funny, wouldn't it, if it weren't so sort of tragic, if it weren't so embarrassing and pathetic. It would be funny, wouldn't it? Comedy of errors. The lunatics have taken over the asylum, haven't they? Running things. How is that possible? So everything about it, let's be fair, zoom out. Everything about HS2 is an abject failure, isn't it? It's supposed to go to the north. It was supposed to be super fast. It's not going to do either of those things. And it's going to cost an insane amount more than it was supposed to and take an insanely longer time than it was supposed to. Could you fail any harder as a project manager? If you were a project manager, could you have failed any harder? Not really. The Metro. Ugh. Ugh. The Metro. Stop picking up the Metro. Yeah. If you're you go to London. It's a London thing, isn't it? The free paper. Stop picking it up. Why would you? It's just the worst kind of slop. They've got a little story here. See hole surgery. Granddad's brain reached via eye socket in UK first. So it's not completely insane slop, but it's just not really national news. This guy had some sort of a brain tumour or a brain aneurysm or something, and instead of boring a hole in his skull, they went in through his eye socket and sorted it out that way. So, good. I mean, interesting. The wonders of modern medicine. That's interesting and cool. Is it front page national news when you could talk about anything that's going on in the world? No, not really. Okay, the Daily Star. Oh, look. Jezza. Anyone who's not watching this is only listening to it. I'm talking about Jeremy Clarkson, not Jeremy Corbyn. Jezza's in trouble. Or was. Says Jezza's heart op. Yeah, Jeremy Clarkson. First pick of Clarkson in hospital. He had some sort of problem with his heart. It says, Jeremy Clarkson speaks for the first time about his health scare in the new Clarkson's Farm trailer, saying his heart wasn't getting any blood. He's all right, though. He's not dead or anything. But that's not good, is it? Or old Jezza. If his heart wasn't getting any blood, so what? It was like his arteries or his veins were clogged up. Too much smoking and too many pies. I don't want to be out of order, but I'm a fan of Jezza, but, you know. Oh, no, he quit smoking, didn't he? He famously quit smoking quite a while ago, still. And who am I to judge? I'm a smoker. All right, Jezza, hope he's okay. Hope he makes a full recovery. Of course. Of course. All right. The Sun. Pure slop. Is this the last one? Yeah, this is the last one. So very quickly, tiny bit of slop from The Sun. Katie Price, if you don't know who that is, she was some sort of glamour model. Again, like 20 years ago or something. You might think, oh, she's not that old. This woman here is only in her, what, 30s or something. No, she's old. She's well older than me. She's got to be in knocking 50-odd. I don't know actually how old she is, but she's had tons and tons of work done. She doesn't look like herself anymore. That's not her actual face now. That's a completely reconstructed face. She's gross and mad. She can't stop crashing her car. I think she's crashed her car like 10 times or something. Is it that much? Anyway, she had loads and loads of marriages. She's a car crasher of a woman. This is like a fourth marriage, fifth marriage, 18th marriage, who knows? This guy. And apparently, it's seeming to emerge, he's some sort of complete shyster, some sort of con man in some way. That he cons some people out of money, including someone at the Sun. Exclusive. Sun's Clemmy. Don't really know who that is, but this woman who actually works for the Sun, a woman called Clemmy, works for the Sun. She gave Jordan's new hubby £1,000 to invest, and he does a runner. And apparently he's taken some money and run off to the Emirates. I was fleeced by Katie's con man, ghosted after scam, Lee not kidnapped, and he's being probed by Interpol. So just say that he does seem to have gone on the run, and that Interpol, the international police, are like looking for him. So, all right, that's it. That's the front page of the Sun. Personally, couldn't care less. Utter slop. All right. Should we have a look at our poll? So today, me and Harry couldn't think of a poll before the show started. So I said to Harry, I'm just going to leave it to you, mate. Do what you want. So I genuinely don't know what this is going to say or what it's about or anything. It's new to me in real time. All right, what have we got here? Okay. Harry asked you guys, which party will win Makerfield? We asked you guys. 1,000 odd votes, over 1,000 votes. We gave you the options of Labour, Reform and Restore. Oh, brilliant optimism. Love it. Brilliant optimism there. With 76% of the vote, Restore Britain. Love the optimism. Love it. Well done, guys. 17% say Reform and 6% say Labour. Love it. Yeah, come on, we can win this. Quite a lot of things, when you're up against adversity, whatever it is, whether it's a full-blown world war or it's just some little tiff with a friend that you're determined not to lose, tiny little thing, tiny little clash of wills with someone, or a full war, whatever it is. Your frame of mind, your morale, your esprit de corps, the positive mental attitude is all important. That's why I hate defeatists and doomers. Hate them. Hate them. They need to shut their mouths. All is lost. Britain's lost. It's over. You're conquered. No. And while you're at it, shut your mouth. Same goes for party politics, right? Restore aren't leading in the polls. I think they are third in the polls. But yeah, a positive mental attitude. We can do this. It's all important. It's quite often, in lots and lots of different ways, the difference between success or not is just belief, self-belief. Even the art historian Kenneth Clark, not the politician Kenneth Clark, the art historian Kay Clark, talked about on a civilizational level, on a historical level, civilizations require a confidence, a self-belief. If you look at the Italians in the 15th century, late 14th century, the Renaissance, they were filled with confidence. If you look at the British in the, 17th century, 18th century, filled with confidence. You look at the army of Alexander the Great or Trajan, filled with confidence and self-belief. And you can do incredible things, incredible things. It's nearly always a small group of highly committed, highly positive people that move history. Love to see that. Just ticked up 77%. Boom. Lovely stuff. All right, should we have a look at a few of the headlines? A few of the websites or any other different stories going on. All right, what have we got? Oh, here's a weird thing. There's a show on TV in Britain called Married at First Sight. you know, the thing. I've never watched it, but I'm aware of the concept and somehow seen clips and stuff. Where you get two people who never met before, and then they get married, and then it's a contrived nonsense, isn't it? Absolute slop. Channel 4, of course. The belly of the beast. Disgusting Channel 4. I used to walk past the Channel 4 building loads. I used to work in Victoria for a while, and it's right near there. Whenever I walked past the building, it was like, it's like the belly of the beast in there. It's gross. In Bowes, Britain, all public funding for Channel 4 would be ripped away from them day one. They get public funding, Channel 4. Really, really. Channel 4 News, some of the worst, most subversive news you can imagine. All right. Their show, Married at First Sight, says there's serious allegations about rape or even a double rape happened on that show. And like Channel 4 have pulled all of the back catalogue, apparently. From like their website or something. Let me know any more details than that. It's breaking this morning that this is a thing. So, all right. High Street Crime Unit to target gangs fronting shops after BBC investigation. It's annoying, isn't it, when the government or the police, the CPS, take action after the BBC do an investigation or after the Daily Mail do an investigation. Then they act. Talked about it yesterday, didn't we? And there's a video on the state of politics, I think, going up today. State of politics. Talking about it as well. And I've talked about it before. Don't give foreign-owned, obviously foreign-owned businesses, certainly ones that are obviously fronts for money laundering, drugs, people trafficking, prostitution, organised crime of any stripe. Don't ever go in there and give them your money. Buy something in there. Make an effort to get it from somewhere else. Don't give them a penny. This is a blight on our country and society. They need to be ripped out. The government is going to spend an extra £30 million on tackling it all, i.e. nothing. Not nothing, sorry. A drop in the ocean. £30 million? Bit of a drop in the ocean, isn't it? Considering this disease affects every single, nearly every single high street in the country. You can go to a small town or a small village and there's like a couple of barber shops and a fake vape shop. Fake mobile phone cover shop. In small villages even, this sort of thing. If your town is of any size, you'll have dozens and dozens of them. In the cities, hundreds, maybe thousands in the big cities of these things. We watch a quick, it's only 1 minute. Let's just watch this. Let's watch this.
Here in Newport, Steve is trying to take control.
A few months ago, we closed this one for the second time. This shop here on the left, we closed twice. Seized about 150,000 cigarettes in the flat above there.
How much is that worth?
Tens of thousands of pounds. Next door to that, we've closed several times.
And it's still open?
Still open.
Is he still selling illegal cigarettes?
I believe so.
Right, he's yeah,
he's there on the right there. Great.
You got him?
Yeah, we got him. He's loitering, waiting for customers, going to the shop opposite, which we closed yesterday.
See that? Have you ever noticed that in your town or your city? Standing outside one of these fake barbers, fake sweet shops, fake vape shops. One of them is just standing outside, smoking or looking at his phone. A lookout. A criminal lookout. In case they're raided by the police and they've got a few moments to try and destroy evidence or whatever. Give themselves a few moments to react. Just a criminal lookout just standing out the front of it. You notice that? You've seen that. You probably have, haven't you? Yeah, like the police or whoever, the trading standards organisation people, will close these shops down and then they just, the same people just open it up straight away afterwards. I don't care. I don't care about the rule of law. I don't care about what's right and wrong, propriety. I don't care about any of that. They're organised criminals. They push their luck to the absolute limit. How can it be that the police will even close a business and it just reopens and the police don't go back there and close it down again? Or they'll close it two or three times and then just, what, and then just give up and then just abandon it? Oh, well, this hive of villainy and crime can just exist here. This little cancer on this high street, we'll just let it go. People not deported. Once again, in Bowes, Britain. I would go to war with these people. I would turn the country upside down in order to root it all out. Try and get every last bit of this cancer. Every last bit. deport them all, clear them out. We've got to clear them out. Sickening. Sickening thing. Those that have allowed, the political elite that have allowed this to happen. An unbelievable crime against the people in, the, in this nation. Unbelievable. All right. A bit about Iran. Trump says he's called off new Iran attack at request of Gulf states. So apparently he was set today, set to do a giant strike against Iran, send Iran back to the Stone Age. And, but no, he's not. He called it off. So what is it? Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and the Emirates asked him not to because they're all so close to striking a brilliant deal. I don't believe it. I don't buy it now. Iran is not going to give up their, what they think is their right to enrich uranium to whatever degree they see fit, i.e. weapons grade. 90% plus. They're refusing that. Now, I could be proven wrong. Over the next coming few days or week or so, it might be, it might come out, mightn't it? It's possible that Iran come out and say, all right, we give up our insistence on that and we'll dismantle all our facilities that do that or ones we are building or going to build and we'll let the IAEA, you know, the international UN body that checks all these things, we'll let them in wherever they want in the whole of Iran to inspect and confirm. We'll let Israeli and US scientists, if they need be, come in anywhere they want in the whole of Iran and make sure we're not enriching uranium to weapons grade levels. And the material we have already got, a few hundred pounds of it or whatever they've got, we'll just give to the Americans to dispose of. That might happen in the next few days or week or so or whatever, mightn't it? I don't think it will, though. I do not think it will. I think Iran, that regime would rather rule over a country of actual rubble and all their people starving to death than do that. That's what I think. Part of their ideology, their ethos, is martyrdom. No, they're like, well, no, martyr us then, because we're not giving up on that. That's our line in the sand. Trump talking about he's going to make a deal soon. Hopefully make a deal soon. I'm not seeing it. I'm not seeing that. Well, it's a bit of an impasse, isn't it? If he's not prepared to do what he's threatened to do, i.e. send them back to the Stone Age, wipe their civilization out, press a big red button, and there's mushroom clouds. If he's not prepared to do that, then he's at an impasse, isn't he? I'm not saying I want him to do that necessarily. As I said yesterday, and I've said a number of times, I would love that regime to be gone. I'm no fan of oppressive, theocratic Islamic regimes, of course. I would like to see that regime removed with as little misery to innocent Persian people as possible. But that's not where we are, is it? That's not one of the options. Trump's options are go back to war with them, start blowing up their bridges and power plants, maybe even send in boots on the ground, or walk away from it. Stop pretending you're going to make a deal about their uranium enrichment program. What's it going to be? Trump. I'm prepared to give him the benefit of the doubt quite a lot. But by this, at this point, at this stage, on Tuesday the 19th of March, I am doubting. I'm doubting it. I'm a doubting Thomas on this now. All right. I mean, it's a tough political military position to find himself in, isn't it? What are you going to do? What's he going to do? All right. There was a story on... Yes, I just thought I'd mention that at the moment, Putin is in Beijing, in China, on a visit. We've just had Trump there, haven't we? And now Putin's there. I think it's just worth mentioning. I think it's interesting, the Putin. I suppose the world, broadly speaking, is sort of... it's got three nexuses of power, really, hasn't it? That are genuine rivals. Washington, Beijing, and Moscow. Economically, Moscow is the smaller partner by a fantastic degree. when you look at the size of the Russian economy compared to the US and the Chinese economy, it's tiny. Like, isn't the economy of just Texas bigger than all of Russia? Something like that, I think. Something like that. Or like, the economy of California is, like, twice as big or something. I don't know. Russia's economy, although it's self-sufficient, it's good enough for Russia, just about. They haven't got a giant standard of living, although it's not terrible. They're not an economic powerhouse like China and the United States. But they do spend quite a lot on their military. They're technically very, very advanced, aren't they? I mean, they send Soyuz capsules to low Earth orbit and the moon, and the Americans don't do that at the moment, do they? They've got the world's biggest arsenal and stockpile of nuclear weapons, haven't they? The Ruskies. So, although in terms of, okay, you get it. In terms of economy, they're nowhere near China and America. But they're still, they don't answer to Beijing or Washington, do they? Putin genuinely doesn't have to do what they say, ever. So he's there. But the relationship, I just thought it would be interesting to talk about, like, historically even, the relationship between Russia, or the Soviet Union, now Russia, and China, communist China. It's always been an interesting, funny one. I've got a long-form series on History Bro, like an 18-part series all about Mao, Chairman Mao. Harry. Yeah, there you go. My channel, History Bro, got like an 18-part series on Mao, so quite a few hours in loads of detail. And the relationship between the Soviets and Mao was very, very strained. From the West's point of view, from the United States' point of view, you just think, oh, they're all red. They're all communists. Like a third of the world's population just went red. Or like, obviously the Soviets, the Russians and the Chinese, it's just one big block now. They're sort of one and the same thing. No, not at all. Not at all. The Chinese and the Russians are as much sort of rivals and enemies as things as the Americans and the Chinese are. It's more complicated than that. I could spend hours, or have in fact already, spent hours talking about that. And of course, Russia isn't communist anymore, is it? You know, Soviet Union collapsed in the early 90s. But the point is, sometimes from the West, you get this anger, you get this argument that the Chinese and the Russians are sort of ganging up against the United States. They're sort of, they work very, very closely together and are one of the same mind. And they're, no, the relationship between Russia and China is very, very interesting, I think. How they, of course, they've got a giant border, haven't they, and everything. And how they're suspicious of each other, just the way the United States and China, or the United States and Russia, are suspicious of each other. You know, they're friendly enough that they'll have state visits like this and shake hands and exchange gifts and do toasts at state banquets and all that sort of thing. But ultimately, are rivals. I think it's interesting, very, very interesting to note. Exactly what does that Winnie the Pooh think about Putin and how Putin conducts his government? But he's not over the moon with it. I'm sure he's not over the moon with it. What does Putin think of Winnie the Pooh? A more powerful man than him. Like, China have got nukes. China have got giant missiles with like multiple MIRVs on it. So, I wonder what Putin really, really thinks in his heart of hearts about China and the Chinese threat. Interesting. All right. It's now, it's already gone past 9. That went quickly. I was going to look down, thought it would be like 2:15. All right. It's already gone 9. Should we have a look at On This Day in History? You guys like that? I like doing that one. On this day, on the 19th of May, down through the centuries, what happened of note? Let's have a quick look. Oh, the execution of Anne Boleyn. On this day in 1536, Anne Boleyn, second wife of King Henry VIII, is beheaded at the Tower of London on charges of adultery, incest with her own brother, and treason. On my history theme show, behind the paywall on lotuscentres.com, do consider signing up for as little as £5 a month, bronze tier membership. Epochs, Bodade's Epochs. I'm currently doing my series about Henry VIII. I've done the monarchy, all the way through from Arthur, well, from Alfred, all the way through, and I'm currently, like, dozens and dozens of long-form content, hundreds of hours. I'm up to Henry VIII at the moment. Last Sunday was Henry VIII Part 1, just doing his early reign, touching on Wolsey. This Sunday will be Part 2. We'll probably get to, hopefully get to, at least the beginning of the Anne Boleyn period, the middle reign, or the last third of Henry's reign. But yeah, Anne Boleyn. So, the Lady Anne. Henry VIII reworked our relationship with Rome in order that he could annul his marriage to Catherine of Aragon so that he could marry Anne Boleyn. But she only gave him a daughter who went on to be Queen Elizabeth I, of course, good Queen Bess, and a couple of other miscarriages, or is it more than two even? And in the end, Henry tired of her and decided that she needed to go. And one of the ways to do that was to put her up on treason charges. And most historians, not all, but most historians think, I think that she wasn't actually guilty of incest with her own brother. But they just wanted to throw the book out. You know, sometimes when that happens, particularly in sort of the medieval period or the early modern period, if there's a kangaroo court and they want to throw the book at you, they just throw more and more and more charges on. It doesn't really matter that the charges are ridiculous anymore. It doesn't really matter. The point is, your name and your reputation is just slandered as much and as hard as possible. That's the point. Not whether it's true or not. Anne Boleyn. They brought over a French swordsman. They didn't use a chopping block and an axe. She was just kneeling like that, and a really, really professional French swordsman lopped off her head in one go. Don't try and tell Henry what to do and what his policies should be, and give him a son. If you fail in that, you're in trouble. Okay, on this day in 1643, the Massachusetts Bay, Plymouth, Connecticut, and New Haven form the United Colonies of New England. It's interesting, the history of the United States. Well, because, of course, this is before the United States. 1643. So by the time we get up to the late 18th century, you know, 1776 and all that, you've got 13 colonies at that point, one of which is New England. But even that, you can imagine there's a process to even get to that, to have one big single political entity of New England made up of various little things. So already the process, already in the mid 17th century, the process of all of that is going on. Interesting to note. Okay, on this day in 1649, England is declared a Commonwealth by an act of the Rump Parliament, making England a republic for the next 11 years. So this is obviously the Civil War, the Oliver Cromwell, Charles I, Charles Stuart Civil War era period. Well, it's after, isn't it? Isn't Charles I beheaded already by that point? I think he must be. The Rump Parliament, i.e. the small remnant of a much larger parliament at one point, got whittled down because of various political infighting amongst the parliamentarians, and Oliver Cromwell not happy with what they're doing. And in the end, you've got a small number of MPs left using that to pass legislation and stuff. The Rump Parliament. Commonwealth. So an interregnum. We had a break in our monarchy for 11 years. Interesting. When I get up to, in my series, when I get up to the Civil War, I'm going to really try and do that in fantastic details, like loads and loads of detail. There's two or three things I've done on epochs, which I've done in sort of silly detail. The career of Julius Caesar, the career of Henry V, a couple of them. You know, 20 episodes, 30 episodes, whatever. I want to do that with the Civil War period and Charles I and Oliver Cromwell. Edward Hyde, the accounts from Edward Hyde. Clarendon, the Earl of Clarendon. Read from that a lot. One of the gold standards of the sources from the time. Okay. On this day in 1885, J. German Chancellor Otto von Bismarck takes possession of Cameroon and Togoland, for the Germans, of course. It's interesting to note, Bismarck, fascinating, absolutely fascinating person, life and career. I mean, he was dismissed not all that long, but after that, I think it's like 1890, when Kaiser Wilhelm II fires him, gets rid of him. It's towards the end of that period. But nonetheless, Bismarck was sort of calling the shots as far as German foreign policy was concerned for a generation or so. Most people look back on it and see him as some sort of great puppet master, a great chess player, great at 4D chess, sort of a dude. Fascinating person. Yeah. Absolutely key to 19th century politics and war. Okay, on this day in 1898, US Congress passes the Private Mailing Card Act. I don't care about this, really. I read this morning. I was like, people at this website are really interested in the history of stamps and postage and something, particularly in the US. Who cares about this? US Congress passes the Private Mailing Card Act, allowing private publishers and printers to produce postcards, which have to be labelled private mailing cards until 1901, known as souvenir cards. That's an obscure bit of history, isn't it? Who cares about that? All right. And on this day in 1919, Mustafa Kemal Atatürk, the Atatürk, lands at Samsun on the Black Sea coast, beginning the Turkish War of Independence. It's a very, very interesting bit of history there. Because, of course, the Ottoman Empire collapses at the end of World War I. Right, the Allies, the British and the French largely, as well as Bedouin Arabs, push the Turks out of Arabia, out of the Levant, all the way back up to the borders of Turkey, to Damascus and beyond. The Ottoman Empire falls, the Young Turks fall, and Mustafa Kemal Atatürk and sort of Turkish nationalists, type of Turkish nationalists, take over. But then there's just immediately a civil war, and it's really, really messy. It lasts like 3 or 4 years. It's just a really, really messy thing, where the Allies are sort of trying to partition it a bit, and the Turks kick out all their Christians, kick out all their Greeks. I can't go into it here. There's just far too much detail to even really give you much of an overview, but it's a really, really interesting and pivotal thing that happened. Most people don't know much about it. Straight after World War One, there were loads of wars all over the place. The ripples from World War One. You think, oh, the war, World War One ended on the 11th of the 11th, 11 in the morning, 1918. The world's at peace. No. Not even close. Look at the Russian Civil War. The Bolsheviks having to have a civil war. Anyway, Mustafa Kemal. Another pivotal person, absolutely pivotal person. Dearly, dearly, dearly loved in Turkey. If you go to Turkey and talk smack about Atatürk, you're in trouble. I don't advise you do that. All right. Shall we have a look at our Rumble Rants and Super Chats this morning? What have we got here? We do our Rumble Rants first, don't we, every morning? Oh, Global Church History in at number one. He's back. Hope you're all right, mate. He's back. In at number one. Lovely. All is right in the universe. Balance has been restored to the universe. Global Church History in at number one. Thank you. You say, on this day, in 526 AD, an earthquake in Antioch killed over 250,000 people. That being the reign of Justinian, would it? Justinian the First. Bad times. There was like a plague of Justinian as well, wasn't there? There was also I think, really bad atmospheric climate anomalies as well. Like loads of crops failed, people starving, and a plague, and an earthquake, and all that stuff. Bad times. You also say, on this day in 1535, Cartier began his second voyage. That's a Frenchman, isn't it? Cartier. Yeah, so that would be... Are you Canadian, Global Church History? Are you Canadian? I think you might have mentioned or referenced you're Canadian before. Apologies if you're not. That's one of the Frenchmen, isn't it? Going up and exploring Isn't he the one that first explored the St. Lawrence River and going to what became Quebec and Montreal and all that? And it's still very early on, isn't it? The first half of the 16th century, still very early on. You know, Columbus only sailed the ocean blue for the first time in 1492. I think that's the one, isn't it? Cartier. One of the reasons why, even to this day, the French connection with Canada, the Canadians. Okay, interesting. All right. Next one, GWFF says, Restore Britain should stand in every available seat. Yeah, why not? If we've got the people and the resources to do it, why not? Yeah, send a message. We're not going anywhere. We're not buying the splitting the vote cope from anyone. That's my feeling. Restore Britain should stand in every available seat, even in Lib Dem strongholds. Yeah. Here's my proposed policy to win over those particularly entrenched voters. Semicolon. Free garden waste collections. That's GWFF's suggestion. Free garden waste collections. Yeah, maybe, yeah. That's the sort of thing Lib Dem voters would go for, isn't it? I think, to be fair, most Lib Dem voters, just on general principle, they hear from Facebook or something, or The Guardian, that Rupert and Restore are evil. And that's it. That's it. That gets in their head, and that's it. They'll never vote for it ever. That's Lib Dem voters for you. Turkey's voting for Christmas. Stupid, small-minded boomers. Largely. Insane, leftoid, purple-haired children. It'll be one of those two things, isn't it? Stinking hippies. Okay. TomRat247 says, I welcome their attempt to try to overturn Brexit because, let's see where he's going with this, because come the populist electoral revolution, I won't be asking. I will be building a dozen Singapore on Thameses, Brexit maxing and jailing them. Based. I had full faith in you, TomRat, that you weren't going to say something woke. And you didn't disappoint. Yeah, cool. Yeah, if we got a government in place that really just lent into Brexit, lent into the whole concept that we are sovereign and we can do what we want and we'll try and make this work, try and make it happen, make it work for our benefit, building loads of Singapore on Thames, do away with loads of red tape and regulation, deregulation, loads of it. Make the state smaller, have more sort of laissez-faire economics. Let businesses thrive, let them thrive. And tax them into oblivion. Yeah. Right. That's what should have been done. Obviously, that's what should have been done. But the powers that be, the establishment, the blob, the uni party, hated the whole concept from day one, didn't they? Because they're globalists. And they were never going to do that. If we got a government in that would do that, lean into that, that would be great, wouldn't it? It would be great. Okay, Jetlag89 says, any reply from Elon about coming on? Also, that Daily Agenda chap is a full-on, mildly retarded mental person, isn't he? He just wants to argue with everyone all the time. Quite sad, really. Yeah. Well, Elon didn't reply. I didn't expect him to. Not likely to, is he? It's a shot in the dark, at best. Yeah, that Daily Agenda guy. I don't like really punching right, but I can't. It's sort of beneath my dignity, really, I feel like, to respond to it in any real detail. No, I can't be bothered with all that. I have no time for that sort of nonsense. Yeah, imagine being old and butthurt and all you've got to do all day is, like, stoke internet drama. No. Not interested in that. Okay. GWFF. It says, you're underestimating the love they hold for their gardens. Oh, right, because you said earlier, to win over Lib Dems, the garden waste collection. Yeah, maybe you're right. Yeah, they do. Right, yeah. Your average Lib Dem voter. Yeah, it's sort of a fairly, well, usually, quite often, actually, a well-meaning sort of middle class person that loves their garden. Yeah. Yeah. You're right there. All right. That's the last Rumble rant. Let's do super chats. Okay. We've got a dozen or so, something like that. Okay. Dr. Molotov, super fan. Dr. Molotov, thank you. You say, you need to rank the greatest men in history. What's your order of these guys? First, second, third. Alexander, Julius Caesar, Genghis Khan. Oh, God. That's the sort of thing I could spend hours and hours on. Do you want on... Harry. On my channel, History Bro, I've got like about 5 hours. 5 hours of content in conversation with Mr. Carl Benjamin about the career of Alexander. Going through all the sources, the original sources. Arrian, Plutarch, Diodorus, Curtius. 5 hours of proper good content all about Alexander. I've been a massive fan of Alexander my whole life, or ever since I first heard about him as a child. I love me some Alexander. Same goes for Caesar on Epochs. Stupid amount of content about Caesar, going through all the main sources, ancient sources. Was it like a 15-20 part? No, was it like 25-30 part series? Well over 30 hours, probably knocking more like 40 hours worth of content talking about Caesar. Going through his account of his conquest of Gaul. Nothing else. There's about 5-6 episodes just on that. So I'm a big fan of Julius Caesar as well. And then what does it mean to be great? I don't want to get all history nerd about it, but I've got to real quick. Because all three of those men are responsible for what today would be judged genocide, war crimes, something like that. So if we're just going to put all that aside and just judge them in the old school definitions of what makes a great person. For me, there's no one greater than Alexander. However, one thing I would say, one of the first things that sprung to mind when I read that, is that Alexander was born a prince. All he need do is wait until his dad died or was assassinated, and he's a king with a ready-made army. Super, super professional veteran army, just ready to rock and roll, literally, on day one, literally. Caesar had to fight for his political position, but was born in a very, very aristocratic, well-to-do family. Found himself at the top of a state that was, again, heavily militarized already, very sophisticated for the age, for the first century BC. Giant veteran legions already to rock and roll at that point. Genghis Khan came from nothing. Nothing. Really nothing. He was just a steppe child. The Asian steppe, the Mongolian steppe. He came from absolutely nothing. Everything he built was from scratch. You know, a mass murderer in modern terms, a war criminal. But for me, his achievement, I'm a bigger fan of Alexander than the other two there. But what Genghis Khan achieved in his own lifetime is scarcely paralleled in all of history. It's almost like an unbelievable story, Genghis Khan. So I say Alexander because he's my favourite. But the greatest of those three men is probably Genghis Khan. Probably. Incredible. Got to do something on the Mongols. I've been threatening for a good couple of years to do some long-form content about the Mongols. We'll do it at some point. Okay. Dr. Climate Abortion says, that's their name, at Dr. Climate Abortion, says, oi from the scrubs, wait. Hello. Scrub Nation, hashtag Scrub Nation. That's Chris Dangerfield's crew. Great lot. I love Chris. Chris, we've got to do something soon. Hit me up. I'll try and hit you up. Good old Chris Dangerfield. Good old Dange. All right. Lammy is my Kang, says, that's his name. At Lammy is my Kang, says, on this day in 2031, the last Olukemi in the UK was... It's funny what you've written there, but I think it's prudent if I don't read it out. There's T's and C's on YouTube. People say, why are you scared to say certain things? Well, if you break the T's and C's too much, you get strikes and warnings and then yeeted. So I was down the pub, I would say it, but we're not. So, but it is funny. I'll give you that, what you've written there. I'm not going to read it out, though. Please do consider giving more super chats in the future, though. Lammy is my Kang. All right. Aim higher, vote low, with a few threes in there, says, Bo, you are the best of the best of the best, sir, exclamation mark. Oh, thank you. Thank you. Harry. Best of the best of the best. Pretty much. No. Yeah, thank you. That's very flattering. That's very flattering of you. Cheers. I appreciate it. I really do. It's always flattering when people say things like that. Okay. QWERTY Oints says, love from Texas. Cheers. Cheers. Aim higher, vote low. Hopefully you Brits have the balls to do what Trump and the Uni Party over here refuses to do. Right, yeah, mass deportations. Yeah, a mass program of deportations. Clear them out. I hope so too. Thank you. Love from Texas. Thank you. Love it. Our American cousins. Mr. Dickie Bingo, how are you, sir? Super fan, Mr. Dickie Bingo. Lovely chap. Met him at the live event. Lovely dude. Says, all pinkos raise tax and suck up the EU. And suck up to the EU. Yeah, you're right, yeah. Bloody pinkos. Reds under the bed. You're quite right. That's all they do. That's all they can do. Tax and tax and tax. They hate the middle... Well, they hate millionaires and billionaires, of course. They point to them as the main problem all the time. But they hate anyone with any wealth. Even the middle class, kulaks. Anyone with any bit of wealth or ownership of anything. Hate them. Hate them. Want to take it away from them. Gross. All right. Daniel D. King says Ebola isn't a concern, Bo, unless your country happens to be importing Ugandans. Oh, wait. It's a good point. It's a valid point, isn't it? That Daniel D. King has said there. Can we stop having any flights in from Uganda for a while? Just for a little while? Can we even do that? No, more safe and legal routes. No, get them straight over from Uganda, if anything. The government hasn't been saying that, by the way. That's an exaggeration. That's hyperbole from me. But yeah, it'd be nice to just stop any Ugandans coming in for a little bit. Maybe just out of pure sort of self-preservation, just because it's like reasonable and prudent to do that. Is there any talk of that? No, 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 there isn't. Mr. Dickie Bingo again says, I live above a Turkish barber. I don't even give him the time of day. I guess that's a typo. I don't even give him the time of day, let alone give them my money. Good. We should make sure they know how we feel about them. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. I absolutely agree with that sentiment. Don't give them a penny if you can help it. There's no need to be nice, even, is there, particularly? There's no need to make them feel welcome. Why should we? They're criminals. They're criminals. They're a blight on our society. Quite right, Mr. Dickie Bingo. All right, and the last one, at least at the moment, says from somebody called 12in4mh. That's their name. They say, hi, Bo. Love your epochs, but would you ever consider doing a series on the Knights Templar? I don't have a coherent story about them. Well, I mean, already we did... I've touched on the Knights Templar a number of times. I did a conversation all about the reconquest or the repulsion of the Turks from Malta, the Knights Templar in that. I've done various things on the First, Second, and Third Crusade. The Knights Templar in that. I've talked about the Templars a number of times here or there. So did a thing all about castles. Talked about the Crack de Chevalier. But I've never done one long-form bit of content just concentrating on the Templars. Maybe I should do that at some point. But I have already talked about them in various at various points at various times. But yeah, maybe I should do that. People like it, don't they? People love the Templars and the Hospitallers and all that sort of thing. Maybe I should do that at some point. All right, that's the last one. So that's the show. It is now 29 minutes past 9 in the AM British summertime on Tuesday, the 19th of May. In the year of our Lord, 2026, you've been the glorious band, the chosen few, my band of brothers and sisters. Thank you very much for joining me. Without you, it isn't a thing. Try and make the best of the day ahead. If you can, you know, if you can. It's not always easy, is it? It's not always possible. And you've got a job and you've got responsibilities and all sorts of things. But if you can, try and seize the day. Time is your most valuable thing you will ever have. And it's finite. It's finite. I don't want to get too preachy about it. So, all right. Until tomorrow morning, take care.